Welcome back to the second hour of Living on Purpose. That's the artist Bjork singing in the background, and I have a guest on the phone. Hello, Neil Slade.
Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
I am great. How are you?
I'm doing great. I don't think that was Bjork, though.
It wasn't.
It was someone similar to Bjork.
Oh, like a remix type of thing.
I don't know.
It was somebody.
But it's okay. It was good.
It was a try. Hey, and you're in Colorado right now.
I sure am.
And I'd like to let the listeners know that if you're at a computer and would like to check out Neil's website while we're talking, that will give you more information than you could actually peruse in a lifetime, I discovered yesterday. And that's www.neilslade.com. That's NEILSLADE.com. Oh, yes, Neil, you are a busy brain man. What is all this about tweaking your brain, and how did you get onto this incredible path?
Well, I got a degree in music education, mm-hmm. K-12. Actually, it was general ed, and my specialty was music,
mm-hmm.
with minor in art, so I was kind of a compulsive, creative person to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And first job I got out of college was teaching in the public schools. I did that for a year,
mm-hmm.
and that was enough of that. And it was more like babysitting. You know, when you're a teacher in junior high school music, it's more of War of the Worlds than anything.
Oh, dear. You had sort of a low tolerance level for that occupation.
Well, you know, there's some people who are really cut out for that,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, more power to them. I was really, you know, I've always been interested as in creativity and being an artist,
mm-hmm.
As opposed to being a public school teacher, which my mother was,
okay.
for 30 years.
Right.
So some people are, I mean, this is their cup of tea and this is what they really love. I began teaching private lessons after that.
Mm-hmm.
But actually the first job I had right after that was with a company called ArtReach Incorporated. And our job was to go to public facilities in the Denver metro area.
Mm-hmm.
And these were all of the hospitals. These were all of the psychiatric hospitals and psychiatric clinics.
Mm-hmm.
These were nursing homes. These were community centers. And so, my job was to do therapeutic workshops.
Mm-hmm.
And through art and music to help improve people's state of mind, and to provide therapeutic creative outlets for these people.
Mm-hmm.
And I did that really for 10 years. Now, I did it full-time for 2 years and then part-time for the following 8 years.
Okay.
And I learned a lot about people that way. I dealt with people who were just out-and-out psychotics,
mm-hmm.
people who were just depressed, people who had different kinds of mental handicaps, people who were brain injury patients,
mm-hmm.
elderly people who had just were growing old and were losing some of their mental facilities,
mm-hmm.
Kids who were disturbed, who were attention deficit disorder, ADA, really the whole gamut, a very wide spectrum of the population.
Hmm.
So I did that for 10 years. Back in 1982, I was watching our public television station here in Denver, and there was a documentary about a fellow who ran a brain and behavior research facility in the wilderness about 40 miles west of Denver. And if you're familiar with Denver, if you go west 20 minutes, you hit the mountains.
The Rockies.
There, you hit the Rocky Mountains. I mean, you know, you look, mm-hmm. there's a wall when you face west of Denver.
Mm-hmm.
You see a wall of mountains. And he had started this facility back in 1957. So he had already been going for about 25 years,
mm-hmm.
or so,
mm-hmm.
when he did this documentary. And at the end of the documentary, they had an interview, and he gave out his address. And so I wrote to him, and he invited me up. So one Saturday afternoon, I got in my car and I drove west, and you had to go up these dirt roads and into the woods, and his place was at about between 9,500 and 11,000 feet,
mm-hmm.
in altitude. It really,
wow.
was removed from civilization. And you could, you know, once you got up there, if you looked 60 miles one direction, you saw Pike's Peak at 14,000 feet, and if you, mm-hmm. turned around the other direction, you saw Long's Peak. at 14,000 feet, and if you looked across the valley, you saw Mount Evans at 14,000 feet.
Hmm.
So you were really up,
you
there,
were up there,
you know, near a tree line and stuff. And his name was T.D. Lingo, which was a name he adopted after he got in. I'll be brief about this. He graduated. He went to four universities, dropped out of his Ph.D. program in behavior science, decided to start his own brain lab, and he figured the only way he could make a bunch of money quick was in show business. So he ended up getting himself an NBC summer replacement show, made a ton of money, bought 300 acres of land up in the mountains, and started his brain laboratory. And so he did that for 35 years. And from about 1982 to 93, I worked with him, and I was his assistant. And we did projects together, and I learned everything I could learn from the guy for 11 years. And I consolidated what he had learned over a 35-year period. And his writing was pretty difficult for the average person to understand. He had a real, almost too colorful way of talking, very idiosyncratic. And so I decided to kind of make a very easy-to-understand book, which consolidated all his hypotheses, all his theories, all of his hypotheses, his experiments and methods. And so in 89, I put out a book called The Frontal Lobes Handbook.
Okay.
And that was followed, and then about 10 years went by, and I revised that with another 10 years of experience, and that became my main book, which is called The Frontal Lobe Supercharge. So I've kind of refined the methods, and I don't know how many, you know, my counter on my website is not accurate. We've had millions and millions of people come through the website, and I get thousands of emails a month. I get people giving me feedback all of the time on brain self-control methods and results that they get, and so I'm always updating and changing things. And so at this point, we've got I've got 5 books and 20 CDs and a feature film out, and they all talk about brain self-control, and specifically the frontal lobes portion of the brain, the amygdala, which is kind of a master quick switch in the brain.
Well, a couple of the quotes on your website that I caught yesterday are that more connections in your brain than grains of sand on all the beaches on Earth. And Carl Sagan saying that there's more combinations of connections in the brain than there are protons and neutrons in the universe.
Yes, billions and billions.
Oh, my God. So, I mean,
it's staggering. I mean, only estimating how many, you know. It's the most complex structure we know of in the universe in terms of, you know, just the potential.
Well, so why is it 90% dormant then?
Well, you know, that's a metaphor. Okay?
Yeah. But why do we just go around in these tiny little treadmills in our minds?
Why do you forget where your keys are?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, if we're using all of our brain all the time, how come, you know, you can't remember where you put your keys 5 minutes ago, you know?
Well, you know,
the fact is we don't use all of our brain all the time.
No, I don't think we do, but I must say that since I talked to you yesterday and we set up this conversation for today on Living on Purpose, and I looked at your website and I thought, I just thought, okay, this is really worth becoming more conscious of my skull and what's inside it, rather than just taking it all for granted and just being, you know, being distracted by all these other things. So, you know, I haven't quite got this clicking thing, or I haven't quite got this visualizing thing happening with my amygdalas, but I'm definitely more conscious of my head.
You're getting your toe wet.
I'm getting my toe wet, Neil.
Yeah.
So I need your help.
Okay.
I want to know a bit more about how to make my life change with these visualizing exercises you have.
Sure. Well, you know, your brain is the motor by which you kind of run your life. I mean, you can be, you know, the most spiritual person in the world, or you can be a total atheist,
live in your heart.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. You know, you're everything's being coming through your brain at some level.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so if you understand how this motor works, it's kind of like, you know, knowing where to put the key when, you know, you want to go somewhere in your car. Well, you got to know what the brake pedal is.
Mm-hmm.
You got to know where the gears are on the gear shift.
Mm-hmm.
you got to know where the headlight switch is, right? But we got a lot of people running around. They haven't got the inkling of how the mind motor works, how the brain works.
And it's right there. It's given to us free, right?
Well, I mean, either you have a brain or you don't exist in this lifetime on this planet. So
right.
That's, you know, so the idea is to, you know, I mean, we, you know, little kids know more about running their Macintosh than they do about their brain.
Mm-hmm.
Most people know more about how to turn on their VCR than they do how to access their limbic system, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And this is basic stuff that you can teach kindergartners in. You know, I taught a program called Mind Music, and one of the an elementary school principal invited me to come to her school for 6 weeks. So we taught kids K through sixth grade, 600 kids, the entire faculty, brain basics. This is what this part of your brain does. This is what this part of your brain does.
Mm-hmm.
Now you click your mix. We had teachers singing in the classroom by the time we were done.
Wow.
You know, so, I mean, this is stuff that kindergartners can learn. And it's stuff that, you know, if you're 80 years old, you can learn. And it's pretty basic stuff. And, you know, we have a little time to talk about some stuff here on the radio show. But, you know, I would really encourage people to go to the website. Obviously, they've got a computer if they're listening to this on the web.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, I mean, you could spend easily 2 weeks at the website and get all this free, fun stuff. And there's pictures and photos and there's brain diagrams and you can see where your frontal lobe, you can see an actual picture of the amygdala.
Yeah, I like that with the little flashing charges.
On the website,
yeah.
We've got cartoons, you know, and we've got music and art and photos. And it's a real fun way to learn
brain
basics.
That website is www.neilslade.com.
Yeah, I recently discovered if you do a Google search for amygdala frontalis, I'm the number one site on Google for that. To me, it was staggering because if you think about all the universities and schools and things, you know, it's quite an honor to be rated number one.
I would say so.
Amygdala frontalis.
Yeah, congratulations.
Well, thank you.
Well, now if you who are listening out there, if you put your hand over your forehead, if you put your forehead in your hand, that's basically you're embracing your frontal lobes like that, right?
The way that I look at the brain and the way that we looked at the brain at the brain lab primarily was through the model developed by Dr. Paul McLean.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a very, very well accepted model of the brain. It's called the triune model of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the very basic to understanding how your brain works and how to get your brain to work the way you want it. First, you have to understand what the main compartments of the brain are. So I'll explain this to you and your listeners. We say the human brain is a triune brain, which means three in one. Triune.
Right, yeah.
Three in one. So you can look at it like a three layers, kind of in the same way that an apple is constructed. Okay, so an apple, in the very middle, you've got the seeds of the apple, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's surrounded by this kind of pulpy core, right? And then around that is the fruit and the skin, okay?
Yeah.
We'll look at the fruit and the skin as being one part. So in the human brain, the very innermost part of the human brain we call the reptile brain. And it really, just hold up your arm in front of you and make a fist, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of what your reptile brain looks like. It's kind of like a knob with a cord coming out of it, and that's your spinal cord, okay? Now, this part of your brain, the reptile brain, is the part that allows your brain to operate on the same level as lizards, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Your reptile brain just computes basic survival, you know? It keeps your heart going, keeps your body the right temperature.
Mm-hmm.
If someone attacks you, it computes fight or flight, basic reaction.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? That's the most inner part of your brain, kind of like the seeds of the reptile brain.
Sure.
Okay?
Yep.
The famous neurologist joke is that the reptile brain computes the four F's of behavior. The four F's: feeding, fighting, fleeing, and reproduction. Okay?
Yeah.
That's what your reptile brain does.
Right.
Okay. Now, around the reptile brain, there's another layer that really looks quite different. It's actually divided in half, and it's called the mammal brain. And as evolution, as reptiles, you know, as evolution came along and mammals appeared, they developed this, they took that reptile brain and it grew into some more functions, okay? Mm-hmm. It was beneficial for survival that these added brain processes be made available. So creatures that had these processes, they kept stayed in the gene pool, and so we grew this mammal brain layer, and it's like the core that surrounds the seeds of the apple.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
Now, think about mammals. How are they different from reptiles?
Well, Well, they can move. I think they're a little more agile than reptiles.
Well, I don't. I mean, if you
you're looking more at what they can do with their brains, though.
It's more behavioral.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Well,
mammals
usually more
nurture their young.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? They raise their young. You know, let me help you, son. Right? Reptiles lay their eggs and they split.
Right.
The kids, you're on your own.
Yeah, that's it. Bye.
Okay. So they nurture their young. Okay?
Sure.
Mammals play. Right?
Yeah.
They play as they're growing up, and they even play as adults. You know, I watch my dogs, man. They play with each other all the time,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a way of testing one's abilities and expressing social behavior.
Sure, sure.
Mammals are social creatures,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm.
Wolves hunt in the pack, you know, lion pride. Reptiles, hey, you know, it's all solo.
Yeah.
The only time reptiles get together is for sex.
Yeah.
Right? Or to fight.
Yeah.
Okay? So that's, you know, basic social behaviors are computed in this mammal tissue of the brain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The mammal brain, also known as the limbic system.
Right.
Also computes emotional types of brain processes.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, look at your dog. Your dog gets happy. Your dog gets sad. Your dog gets excited. Your dog gets bored.
Gets bored, yeah.
Right? Well, compare that with your turtle. No, there's a big difference there, right?
Yeah.
So we add on all these emotional behaviors.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very interesting part of the human brain to start tuning into what's happening with emotions, because it really signals to you what other parts of your brain are. The limbic system is kind of like the thermostat on your wall, but we'll get into that in
mm-hmm.
a second. It tells you a lot of things.
Okay.
Okay, now around that,
mm-hmm.
around the core, you've got the big fruity part of the apple and the colorful skin, right?
Mm-hmm.
In the human brain, the mammal brain and the limbic system and the reptile brain, I'm sorry, the reptile brain and the mammal brain together only make up about 1/6 of the entire bulk of the human brain.
Mm-hmm.
The other 5/6 is what's called the primate brain. And if you look at higher mammals, such as primates, they've added on even more layers around this limbic system, which is a more, it adds on more refined processes and behaviors that go far beyond what a simple mammal brain can process.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in humans, you know, we're talking about language, we're talking about math, we're talking about very fine motor abilities, we're talking about memory retention,
mm-hmm.
we're talking, you know, very high refinements of mammal type behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Now, before you said, if you grab your whole forehead with your hand,
mm-hmm.
so everyone listening, take your hand and just hold on, spread out your fingers and hold on your forehead. Okay?
Yeah.
Now, everything underneath your hand is a whole 1/3 bulk front part of your brain, and this is called the frontal lobes. You know, your brain's divided, this primate brain is divided up into sections, the side parts of the brain. The temporal lobes, we have the occipital lobes, which are in the back of the head, which process visual types of information, parietal lobes, which is the top of the brain, and then we've got this front part of the brain called the frontal lobes, and they are this kind of big, there's a lot of mystery in what the frontal lobes do. We have a pretty good idea of some basic frontal lobes processes, but there's still a lot of mystery in there. But essentially, the frontal lobes are the most advanced part of your brain, okay?
That's where the creativity and imagination and stuff spring from.
Well, we have somebody told me what the correct word for this was.
Oh, okay.
And now I can't remember. it's not anagram. It's it's when letters stand, each letter of a word. You make up a new word, each letter stands for something. It's called a, begins with an A.
An anagram?
No, I don't think it's anagram. I think it's a... Oh well, perhaps I'll read. It'll click on.
Yeah, that's.
But anyway, we've got a little abbreviation for it. Cecil, C I C I L.
Okay.
Remember Beanie and Cecil, the cartoon from the 50s?
Mm.
The little boy had a little cap, and it had a little propeller on the top. And
sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Cecil, C I C I L.
Okay.
Creativity, imagination, cooperation, intuition. Logic.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Right?
Yeah,
if
yeah.
You remember Cecil, then you can remember creativity, imagination, cooperation, intuition, and logic.
Mm-hmm.
The frontal lobes computes strictly these types of processes. Whereas a reptile brain is 100% competitive consciousness, right?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The reptiles don't care about anything except their own survival. They're completely competitive. Frontal lobes sees cause and effect. It understands that 10 brains are better than one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It understands the concept of democracy as opposed to reptilian fascism, all right?
Yeah.
The frontal lobes have this ability for abstract reasoning and abstract thought, imagination, right?
Uh-huh.
You can imagine something that has not even been created yet. You can see something with your frontal lobes inside your mind's third eye, right? The third eye. Where's the third eye?
Right
in front of your forehead.
Yeah, right in the middle of the frontal lobes.
Right in the middle of the frontal lobes.
Jeez.
That's no coincidence.
No.
That's where your imagination is taking place. It puts together little pieces of memory and cause and effect, and it can create this abstract image. Okay, right now I'm standing, I'm floating above my kitchen floor, 36 inches, and there's little butterflies that are holding me up, and they're tickling my toes. Okay, now that was an image that you just had in your frontal lobes.
Yeah.
If you had a frontal lobotomy, you couldn't see that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about how that, if you know anything about that experimentation.
Well, sure. You know, emotions are tied into, that has to do more with really, I mean, they stopped doing frontal lobotomies because it really wasn't too terribly effective.
Yeah, that's what I wondered.
It calmed people down in some ways, but it had a lot of other bad side effects.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't do that anymore. It's kind of interesting. I don't really quite understand the logic behind that, because if we look at the history about what we know about the frontal lobes, we can see that people who have... there's a fellow named Phineas Gage, a very famous case. This was back in the 1800s.
Mm-hmm.
He was a railroad worker. He was tamping down a railroad tie, and some dynamite went off, and it took this route. You know what a railroad tie is?
Sure.
Big steel, rod that holds down helps hold down the track.
Sure.
Well, this thing went. It entered the lower orbit of his eye.
Wow.
And it actually severed the connection between his frontal lobes and the rest of his brain.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And he had no frontal lobe function after that. And he was a highly non-rational. I mean, he was a very rational, very easygoing, very sociable person before the accident.
Mm-hmm.
But after the accident, which miraculously he survived, he became very irritable, a very non-rational, very impulsive. He would have fits. So, this whole idea of frontal lobes making, helping people, it doesn't really add up to me, and ultimately didn't add up to a lot of people, and it stopped in it. But we found out about what the frontal lobes do from people who had damage to their frontal lobes.
Yeah, what they were missing then.
What happened? How does this person's behavior differ now that he doesn't have his frontal lobes?
Mm-hmm.
So after all this time, after decades and decades of studying these cases and looking at what the brain does, we now have a really pretty good idea of what part of the function of the frontal lobes is. But interestingly enough, there are these big silent areas in the frontal lobes. You know, if in brain surgery, let's say you have a tumor and you have to have a brain, you have to have brain surgery. One of the things they do is they have a little electroprobe, and they stimulate parts of your brain, right? And by stimulating the parts of the brain around the tumor, right, they can decide how much of this tumor they can cut out without destroying some, you know, crucial processes that you have. Okay,
right.
So they can actually touch part of the brain, and they can, you know, your finger will wiggle, right? Or you'll remember something, or they'll ask you to, you know, do a very simple mental exercise, and they can decide whether they, you know, by stimulating this part of the brain, which part of the brain is doing what. Well, in the frontal lobes, there are these big areas that they stimulate, and they just don't do anything. Now, Lingo, up at the brain lab, after studying, you know, really thousands of people who came through the brain lab and seeing what they did with their brain, he came to the conclusion that the frontal lobes is a locus for what we fondly call paranormal abilities. Things like telepathy, precognition, clairvoyance, clairaudience, and telekinesis. He came to this conclusion, and I've come to the same conclusion myself, is because there seemed to be a connection between what we understand as frontal lobes processes, like imagination and creativity, and the spontaneous occurrence of these other five silent senses. So, you know, that's our idea, that when people begin to use more of their unused, sleeping, dormant frontal lobes, all of these paranormal types of abilities just spontaneously surface.
Yeah, they sort of open up.
And they just sort of happen without you trying. And I, you know, I personally, I would verify that. I from my own experience, and also from the experience of all the people that I've come in contact with who begin these brain exercises and start. They say, "Man, you know, I'll give you a couple of good examples."
Okay.
This happened 2 days ago. When you go to sleep, okay. One of the things, let me start over. One of the things that, one of the activities that we recommend to people when they're trying to get brain, more brain self-control, is to start paying attention to dreams.
Right.
And specifically to this very misty period between sleeping and full waking consciousness in the morning. That short reverie type of period as you're moving from dreams to brushing your teeth in the morning. Okay, and we call that morning pre-consciousness. And you're sort of, you know, you're like where you're half awake, but you're still half asleep.
Yeah.
You're kind of just drifting, you know, you're floating in between. And it's an interesting period because although you're conscious to a large degree, you're able to access a lot of these subconscious and almost repressed types of thought processes that reveal themselves at night while you're dreaming, right? But you're still aware of them. If you think about it, when you're in bed at night, you're, most of your defenses are off. You know, you go to work, you get on the bus, you're walking down the street, you know, you've got body armor on, right? Because it's a jungle out there, right? So when you're walking around in your daily life, you know, out there in the jungle, you have a lot of defenses on. And what that does is that blocks a lot of these higher paranormal types of abilities that are just naturally part of your brain and part of your mental landscape.
Right.
You can't access them because you got your fists up mentally. You're protecting yourself. Well, when you get into bed at night, you take the gloves off, right? I mean, you take your clothes off. You're vulnerable.
Sure.
I mean, imagine, okay, you know, imagine going into work and saying, okay, well, listen, I'm riding the bus. I'm going to make myself unconscious here right now, and, you know, you guys do whatever you want. You know, it's unthinkable. But at home, when you're in bed, that's essentially what you do.
Sure, yeah.
You take all the armor off. And what that does is that that opens you up to all internal signals and external signals.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay? And what I tell people is really pay attention, really, to be very aware of that morning preconscious, because you are, the radar dish is on full blast.
Right.
And you can take notes, okay? Do you ever notice that when you wake up in the morning, if you've had a dream, you can remember it.
Oh, yeah.
While you're still in bed.
Yeah.
But 10 minutes later, after you've had your first cup of coffee, you couldn't remember it. It's much more difficult to remember.
Yeah, it sort of makes more sense at first. And then as you try to, you know, it doesn't integrate into your regular daytime awareness as easily.
Well, frankly, you'll just forget it. You can't remember what your dream was very often, you know, 10 minutes later. But mm-hmm. if you're lying in bed, so...
That's the best time is to wait.
That's the best time. Keep a notepad and a pencil by your bed.
Yeah, and don't jump out of bed right away.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Really, if you can, you know... you know, just kind of pay attention. So I'll tell you a couple of these morning precautions.
Neil, just before you do that, and I can't wait to hear them, but I just want to remind the listeners to check out your website while we're talking, which is www.neilslade.com.
That's NEILSLADE.
Exactly. And you are listening to CHLY Radio Malaspina at 101.7 FM and around the world at www.chly.ca. And you can email livingonpurpose@chly.ca if you'd like to contribute any comments. And Neil, I did want to let you know that word, a listener let me know here that it's acronym.
Acronym, that's it.
There you go.
Thank you.
Ah, wins a prize.
That person wins a prize.
Yeah.
That's great.
And,
now, you know,
yeah, okay.
Now what I've got to do is come up with a little game for myself, like remember what that word is. Acronym. Well, I'll think of something.
Just think of acrimonious.
Well, for me, that's a big word. You know, I'm a musician, you know.
Yeah, I've heard about musicians.
That's more than three syllables. I have trouble with. So let's see. Acrobat.
Good
acrobat.
One. Yeah,
so,
acronym.
Acronym. Acronym. Okay, I'll work out something.
And this listener also mentioned that she does her best problem solving in the morning, in that coming through out of the dream state. Yeah.
Well, then, you know, I mean, Edison, I mean, he's famous for saying, listen, well, if I have a problem, mm-hmm. I take a nap.
Exactly.
You know?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, things come to you, you know, because you, again, this has to do with the reptile brain versus the frontal lobes. All that advanced processing is happening in the frontal lobes, right?
Where is the prefrontal cortex, though? I'm trying to picture where that is.
That's the very tip of the frontal lobes.
The very tip of them, okay.
Okay, so prefrontal.
Right,
okay? You've got
right.
the frontal lobes and the prefrontal.
Mm-hmm.
All part of the frontal lobes.
Mm-hmm.
Prefrontal meaning just the sort of like the very tip.
Right.
Okay. So anyway, where was I?
You were going to tell us these cool examples happened.
These are perfect examples.
Okay.
There's a fellow I name. His name is that I know. His name is Maury Wolfson.
Mm-hmm.
I see the guy maybe once a year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I talk to him maybe twice a year. Well, I had a dream about Maury Wolfson that night, and I hadn't talked to him in months and months.
Right.
And the dream was I was going to play a music gig with him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was pretty prominent in this dream.
Mm-hmm.
I had, you know, no reason to dream about the guy.
Mm-hmm.
Got up out of bed, sat at my computer, opened my window, and who do you think comes walking up my front steps?
Your
right
buddy.
Over my lawn, up more.
Wow, wow.
Okay, another one. This was the night before. I had dreams of giant elephants.
Okay.
People riding giant elephants. Don't know why. I have never had a dream about an elephant before in my entire life.
Uh-huh.
Elephants everywhere in my dreams. I get up, go to the library to return some stuff, and sure enough, one of the library clerks had taken a model of an elephant and stuck it right on top of the computer terminal
wow.
where you return your books. And then, if that wasn't enough, I went to lunch at a restaurant that I had not been to before.
Mm-hmm.
Sit down, and I look up on the wall, and there's pictures of elephants everywhere.
Mm.
Now, what good is, you know, knowing that Maury Wolfson is going to come up my sidewalk before he comes up my sidewalk? What good is it knowing that I'm going to start seeing elephants the next day?
Yeah.
Those things, not in and of themselves, may not be important, although I could probably analyze them and
mm-hmm.
come up with some pretty meaningful symbology.
Mm-hmm.
The idea is my brain, my higher intelligence, part of my brain is saying to me, pay attention to morning preconscious imagery and mm-hmm. symbols, because mm-hmm. you're going to get advanced warning, advance notice of things before they happen.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be something that you have to protect yourself about, but it's just giving you information before you need it, just so you know what to look for, I guess.
That's right. You know, I mean, if you're going somewhere, you get a map, because
right.
the map tells you, you know, if you go this way, you're going to get to where you're trying to get to.
Mm-hmm.
Your brain, in the same way, can give you a map of where you may want to go. Okay? You know, we use telescopes, we use binoculars to see ahead of us. We have tools that allow us to predict things that we could not know without the tools. And the function, as I see it, of these paranormal abilities of clairvoyance and telepathy and clairaudience,
mm-hmm.
and we have lots of examples of that on the website that are really pretty fun,
mm-hmm.
is basically to help you survive better.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? The reason why we developed a limbic system and a frontal lobes and a primate brain is because it aided our survival in a bigger range of environments.
Mm-hmm.
It allowed us to survive better. You know, if you take a tropical reptile and you stick him in the Arctic Circle, he's not going to last very long.
Right.
But you can take a human from the equator, and you can put him in Alaska, and because they have frontal lobes, they can survive.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, the frontal lobes, these abilities of creativity, imagination, cooperation, intuition, and logic, they help us to survive better.
Mm-hmm.
And in the same way, these paranormal types of spontaneous communications, when they occur, they're really a way of helping us survive even better than we would have without them.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason for these. Anyway, in terms of brain anatomy,
mm-hmm.
okay, what is the connection between the paranormal and the frontal lobes?
Yeah, what is that connection?
Versus the reptile?
Yeah.
Well, when people came up to the brain lab for the 6-week Brain and Nature course, for
mm-hmm.
example, what they did is they were able to take off the armor.
Right.
Okay. They were able to click out of fight or flight.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because they no longer had their teacher or their boss screaming at them to do this job and to do that job.
Mm-hmm.
It was like, okay, I'm just going to relax. I'm going to be here in Mother Nature. I'm just going to study myself. I'm going to study. And the defenses came off, and they learned what these frontal lobes processes were.
Mm-hmm.
And they started reading, and they started meditating, and they started doing transactional analysis, and they started doing journal keeping, and they started playing music, and they started drawing, and they did all of these frontal lobes processes that just lay dormant when
mm-hmm.
they were, you know, trying to learn what happened in 1812, you know, and when they were, you know, waiting in line at the cafeteria or waiting, you know, all these frontal lobes processes that are just not being used. When they started tuning into these frontal lobes processes, these paranormal things just spontaneously happened without them trying.
Mm-hmm.
And so we made the connection between reptilian fight or flight processes,
mm-hmm.
and the shutting off of these natural types of, you know, telepathic and precognitive types of experiences.
Mm-hmm.
So there was an interesting thing that we saw: the less you were processing fight or flight, the more these interesting
mm-hmm.
paranormal processes began to occur.
Now, okay, so what is this, what's the relationship with this location called the amygdala?
Okay, now right smack, now you've got the three layers of the triune brain, right?
Mm-hmm.
Reptile, mammal brain, frontal lobes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, right in the middle of the mammal brain, which is the middle layer,
mm-hmm.
there's a little knobby portion of your brain, and it's about the size of the tip of your thumb.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just where you're about the size of where your fingernail starts.
Okay.
And it comes from the word the Greek word meaning nut or almond.
Okay.
Amygdala, that's where that comes from.
Okay.
Nut.
Nut.
And it actually looks kind of like a walnut. And it's a little protuberance inside the mammal brain.
It's like a mini brain.
Yeah, well, yeah, right.
I mean, a walnut, so it looks like a brain.
Yeah, okay. That's what a walnut looks like. Walnut looks like a human brain.
Okay.
Oh, incidentally, you know, the mammal brain, and I don't know if I mentioned this, the mammal brain, the primate brain, divided into two hemispheres, just like a walnut.
Oh, well, there you go.
They're divided in half. So each side of your brain has its own amygdala switch.
Okay.
Okay, you've got a left amygdala for the left hemisphere and a right amygdala for the right hemisphere.
Mm-hmm.
Reptilian brain only being one portion, but the limbic system, the mammal brain, and the primate brain and the frontal lobes, they're divided in half. So they each get their own amygdala switch.
Mm-hmm.
Now the amygdala is connected to all different parts of your brain. It's connected to your reptile brain.
Mm-hmm.
It's got connections there. It's also got connections to your prefrontal cortex, to your frontal lobe,
mm-hmm.
right? And what the function of the amygdala is multifold. It's kind of like the thermostat on your wall. It does two main things. One, through emotions, it will indicate to you which part of your brain is being used.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Example, you're walking down the mountain trail and suddenly you see a rattlesnake in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
Your amygdala instantly clicks backwards and it increases the neurochemical electrical activity that's happening in the reptile brain.
Mm-hmm.
Your adrenaline kicks in, your heart rate goes up, your breathing rate goes up, and you click into fight or flight.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, it bypasses the cortex. Okay? When your amygdala clicks backwards, it's a shortcut to your reptile brain.
Oh, okay.
So you can react instantaneously where you don't have to think, oh, hey, there's a snake. Now, what is that design on the back of its back? I think that's a diamondback rattlesnake, yes. And I believe that's common in North. No, you don't think about that stuff. You just go, whoa, and you take off, and you run, okay?
Yeah.
That's your amygdala clicked fully backwards. Or another example, you get on the bus, and you see this nasty looking guy, and suddenly he starts coming at you with a baseball bat, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you click backwards and you hop out of your seat and you're down to the other end of the bus, and
mm-hmm.
you react.
Yeah.
That's your amygdala clicking backwards. Bypasses all the intellectualism.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, conversely, we say the amygdala can remain clicked forward. Okay.
Yeah.
Now, scientists haven't got this pinned down because there's a lot of interesting information about it. But you can stimulate the amygdala for both punishment but also reward.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Certain animals learn reward behaviors through the amygdala connections. And they learn, for example, that if they do certain types of activities, this will enhance their survival.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's other parts of the brain, pleasure centers, that do this. The amygdala seems to be involved in this. But just to generalize, I'll say this.
Mm-hmm.
If you click the amygdala backwards, you go into fight or flight. If you allow the fight or flight responses to remain on low rather than on high,
mm-hmm.
you can then process things with your frontal lobes and get all the creative juices going.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now think about it. When you're in fight or flight, you're not being creative.
No.
Right? When you're threatened, you're not writing a symphony.
No,
right?
You're being instinctual.
You're not thinking at all. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So when we say click your amygdala forward, what we're saying is turn off the fight or flight responses or keep them on bare minimum,
mm-hmm.
so that you can then compute E equals MC squared.
Right.
Now, the very interesting thing, now, so that's clicking forward versus clicking backwards.
Mm-hmm.
Now, very interestingly enough, since this amygdala is right in the middle of this mammal brain and in the limbic system, and again, like the thermostat on the wall, it's also indicating to you through your emotions which part of your brain is processing the most or which part is turned on. If you're experiencing boredom, if you're experiencing negative emotions, fear, pain, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you've got, when you jab your hand with a penknife accidentally, okay, you're not writing, you're not thinking about spelling.
No.
You're not thinking about, you know, singing in a choir. You're mm-hmm. back in that reactive survival
mm-hmm.
mode, right?
Yeah.
You know, the pain, okay? When you're bored, you're not being creative. You're not being, you can't be using your imagination and be bored at the same time.
No, you're just keeping it in suspension
like
mode.
Nothing's happening.
Yeah.
So these negative emotions are telling you through their emotions, you're clicked into your reptile brain. You're only using 1/6 of your brain.
So how do you click them forward now?
Ah, okay. Well, this is kind of like what came first, the chicken or the egg.
Yeah.
Does the amygdala turn on the frontal lobes, or does the frontal lobes click the amygdala forward?
Right.
Your brain is kind of processing information in many directions at once. So we don't really know this, but we do know this. If you can imagine a feather, okay,
mm-hmm.
your audience... If your audience is listening, just close your eyes for a second. Imagine you're holding a feather in one hand. And with the other hand, just stroke the feather from the bottom to the top. And remember what that feels like?
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, as you stroke the feather turns your favorite color. What's your favorite color? Do you see the feather turning that color now? Okay? And the feathers kind of starts to vibrate a little bit, like there's electricity going through it.
Mm-hmm.
Now take the feather now, and with the tip of your feather, okay, what you can do is reach in through your forehead and go about 1 inch inside your left temple, right behind your eyeball, between your eyeball and your inner ear, and that's where you'll find your left amygdala on the left side, about an inch inside, and just tickle, 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 tickle the front of the, oh, I heard you laugh, that means your amygdala is clicked forward, you're laughing, okay? Now take the feather and reach in through the right side of your forehead and go through and go past your eye and just find that amygdala that's 1 inch inside your temple on there and go tickle, 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 tickle. Okay. Now, if you can do that, you've just clicked your amygdala forward. How do we know that? Because you were not in fight or flight.
Yeah.
You were using your imagination. You cooperated with me. You used abstract imagery.
Yeah.
That's a frontal lobes process.
Yeah, I was led forward out of my complacency.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. You were not bored.
No.
You were being creative.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a very simple way. You know, you can be stuck in a traffic jam and you can tickle your amygdala with that feather. And then you'll start to remember, oh, all these frontal lobes processes. Well, you can start singing a song while you're stuck in traffic.
Mm-hmm.
You can turn on your favorite radio station, and if it's boring, you find another radio station. You know what I used to do? I used to be a newspaper carrier.
Oh, yeah.
And I'd have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning and deliver newspapers, and mm-hmm. I found it to be a terribly boring job. Once I got the route memorized, it was pretty boring.
Mm-hmm.
Now, boredom is having your amygdala click backwards. So I started clicking my amygdala forward. And once I did that, I started bringing a tape recorder on my newspaper route.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was delivering newspapers, I would click my amygdala forward, and I would compose music, and I would sing it into the tape recorder as I was throwing newspapers on porches.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got home, the first thing I did is I went back to sleep for a few hours.
Yeah, right.
Then when I got up, I started writing out the melodies.
Hmm.
And I wrote a symphony that way.
Wow.
And actually go to the website and hear portions of that symphony.
See? It's all a matter of choice. What do you want to do?
Yeah. Are you going to click backwards or are you going to click forwards? Now, an interesting thing about that article, there was a psychologist. There
mm-hmm.
were, I think, three psychologists that they interviewed for that the Star article, which was a nice article, I thought. One of the psychologists said, well, you know, you can imagine tickling your elbow and it's going to do, you know, that would do the same thing as tickling your amygdala. And I would beg to differ, because here's the thing. What is important in all of this is to understand how the brain motor works. You could imagine tickling your elbow all day long, and it would tell you absolutely nothing about how your brain works, right?
Right.
But if you tickle your amygdala, you're now engaging concepts of neuroanatomy.
Right.
And you're engaging your brain, and you're thinking about how my brain works.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's important. And, you know, you are engaging, this is my frontal lobes, and what is my frontal lobes doing right now?
Mm-hmm.
What is my frontal lobes capable of doing? What's my reptile brain? What's my reptile brain for? So there is all of the difference in the world when you tickle your amygdala and tickle your elbow. It makes all the difference.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Now, I have a question from a listener about when she had a young child, when her child was quite young and kind of upset, like couldn't sleep or whatever. She would massage her child's, like from the edge of the eyebrow and around, you know, around to the cheekbone and back up, and it would calm her daughter right down.
Uh-huh.
Would that be kind of stimulating that area of the brain in an effective way that way?
Yes, absolutely. You know, but on a lot of different levels.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's an exercise on the website and in the books called Healing Hands.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that was recommended to parents when they had a small infant or a child to regularly stroke, just like you might pet your dog, but regularly stroke the cranium of the infant gently all over the different parts of the skull in a effort to encourage activity just from the physical manipulation of the different parts of the brain.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there are many, many studies that show that physical contact is extremely important. And we always have physical we tend to understand how it's important to have physical contact and stroking in terms of psychological development of children, but we're saying it's important not to neglect these areas of the cranium as well.
Well, you miss that as you get older. Your head isn't touched as much, and anytime, you know, if you go to get your hair cut and the person massages your head a bit, you just sink into that, right?
Oh, it's wonderful. It's wonderful.
Hey, Neil, we're right up against the top of the hour, but one of the listeners has an acronym for you.
Oh, good.
Are you ready?
An acronym for acronym.
Yeah. Okay. Any conscious reminder of your naming monograms.
That's great.
That's for you.
Any conscious reminder of naming your acronym. That's very good. I like that. I don't think I'm going to forget that word after today.
No, he'll remember it now. Between that and Acrobat, I think you're set. Hey, Neil, will you come back and talk to me again sometime?
Sure. Oh, anytime you want to have a discussion, I'm happy to.
This was a great starting point. I'm really pleased you were able to be available today.
Well, I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, good. And I'll remind the listeners that your website is www.neilslade, NEILSLADE.com.
And I would encourage people, feel free to send me email. I answer every single email.
Even though you get thousands?
Well, I do. I send out thousands of emails every month.
Good for you.
And, check out, there's lots to do on the website. As I said before, we have the materials sell dirt cheap. We have a DVD that has 5 hours of material on it, 5 books, 20 CDs, plus all of the free stuff on the web. So
yeah, you've got a lot to explore.
And we have a couple forums. So people can go on the website, join the forums, and converse with 10,000 brain explorers across the planet. We've got over 11,000 people in our Yahoo groups.
Wow.
These days. We've got two groups.
Well, good for you. It sounds like you're really charged up with all this exciting investigation, Neil.
Lots is going on.
Yeah, lots to explore. Hey, well, we'll be in touch. And again, I thank you so much for being my guest today.
All right.
On Living on Purpose.
Well, we'll talk again.
All right, Neil.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.